Go. Hello and welcome to the Principal Liner Notes podcast. I probably should have pressed record like 5 minutes ago with our two friends here, Greg Bear and Ryan Rudzeski. Did I mess it up?
You got it. No, you got
Rudzeski,
it.
like Gretzky. Okay. And I'm so grateful that they're here. They are the authors of, and I'm totally fanboying here, guys. They are the authors of a wonderful book, When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers's Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, and Caring Kids. And it is, as I said at the at right kind of at our pre-conversation, this is required reading. So this is your principal speaking. This is your high school English teacher speaking. This is required reading. Ryan and Greg, thank you so much, and welcome to the Principal Liner Notes podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank
We're
you.
really happy to be here.
It's an honor to be with an educator like you, Sean. Thank you.
Oh man, I'm very, very grateful for that. Thank you, Greg. So, let's just cut to the chase. This, usually at the beginning of the podcast, I will say what episode this is and or what episode number this is. And I always look for connections. I look for ways in, and Greg, you all but invited me to your house. The 7 hour ride to Winston to Pittsburgh. This is episode 109, and I thought, well, if this was like the John F. Kennedy PT 109 celebration, sure, that would work. And then I was hoping that this would be episode 143. And for those of you that know the Fred Rogers story and his biography, that was his weight, but that was his exact weight for most of his, if not all of his adult life. But 143 stands for I love you. Those are the letters in the alphabet. And so I was going to deem this as an honorary episode 143, but then Ryan made a connection to the book that I just kind of slightly embarrassed that I missed, because on go ahead, Ryan, page 109 of your book. Go for it,
So,
pal.
listeners of your podcast are clearly familiar with your love for the Beatles. And so, before we started recording, we were trying to figure out what's the connection between Fred and the Beatles. There's got to be something. And we realized that George Harrison makes an appearance in our book as part of the Traveling Wilburys, and it's on page 109.
Right. And I don't want to, and I do want people to buy the book, and I do want people and I did just say this was required reading for all educators all over the world, and I do mean that. This is just such a beautiful book. But this notion of a band, and you've got in the Wilburys just these five iconic folks. Superstars, Jeff Lynne, Tom Petty, George Harrison, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, and they're all kind of hiding in this band, and putting aside their egos and taking great joy in each other's talent and forming this brotherhood, which is very much akin, even though it's called Mr. Rogers's Neighborhood, it
Yeah.
wasn't about him, right?
No, it was about the neighborhood. In fact, most of, obviously, all of the characters on the neighborhood were caring adults, right? And we would meet the baker, handyman Negri, Officer Clemens. It was a band of amazing individuals, each with their own talents, who came together to create a great learning landscape that we got to enjoy as those viewers all those years ago.
Absolutely. And I, man, just the way that you frame that, and just thinking back to some of the episodes. I mean, it was his show, but everyone was invited. Everyone was included. Everyone was accepted. And just that level of a familiarity I always found comforting as a kid. Well, come on, we're going to go down to Joe Negri's music store, and oh, look who's here. Yo-Yo Ma, how are you, Yo-Yo? I mean, just that familiarity, and how everyone, it seemed, on that show, even someone like a Yo-Yo Ma, this big iconic cellist still is, who would put aside all of his Grammys and Juilliard and hit album, hit classical albums. And here he was playing in a small neighborhood music store, interacting with folks just like you and me.
There was, you know, a deep appreciation for music, and there was a literal band, right? Johnny Costa, if any of your listeners are jazz fans, Johnny Costa is an incredible jazz musician. Yeah. And they played live on just about every episode. I mean, what TV producer, what TV creator would go through the trouble to have a top-notch jazz musician improvising on every single episode? That's amazing to me. And it's beautiful music.
It really is. And for those of us, you know, who were children of that era, or any child that watched that show, it's very similar to Vince Guaraldi, what he did with the Charlie Brown television specials. That was Vince Guaraldi and Johnny Costa. That was my introduction to jazz, and created that kind of lifelong love affair. And good point, Ryan, that was done live in the studio.
Yeah.
The trio there live playing off of what was going on in the show, right?
And it's, you know, that comparison to Guaraldi is interesting, because you hear Johnny Costa's piano and it's his sound. Fred himself used to say, you know, we each have a sort of inner music that only we can make. And you hear that piano and you know it's Johnny Costa. And it's so intertwined with the atmosphere of the neighborhood at large that you only have to hear a couple of notes to be brought right back to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
And it's all too rare the way that music is integrated with the story and what it is that the creators are endeavoring to do. I'm a fanboy of Bluey. My girls love Bluey. They're just about aging out of it. I'm hanging on to it because I think it's an amazing modern show with a great storyline that to me resonates so much with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. It's in that same stratosphere, and music is integral to that. When we use music well, what it does to enhance the learning landscape is incredible.
I agree with you there, Greg. I mean, and what a great connection to Bluey, and think about it, somewhere 40, 50 years from now, there's going to be a child or some version of Greg and Ryan here who are going to write their own kind of tribute or homage to Bluey, right? You know, who knows, you know?
Ryan, as grandparents, maybe 30 years from now, we need to write that book.
There it is. That's the sequel. Co-write it with your grandkids or your own kids or something. That would be fun.
That's a fun life goal, actually.
Yeah, we put it out there in the universe. But, you know, music, as I've said on this podcast, is this kind of unifying, universal, divine force. It's a language that anyone can understand, whether you're Yo-Yo Ma or Fred Rogers or Vince Guaraldi or Britney Spears. Music, regardless of what state, what country, what area, we all speak the language. Those notes, and there's some notation that's different based upon different cultures and what have you, but still, it brings us together. And Fred used that to such powerful, just powerful moves as part of that learning landscape in music. I mean, he himself was a musician, right?
First and foremost. I mean, he was an undergraduate. He majored in music at Rollins down in Winter Park, Florida. Incredible piano player, outshined only by his wife, Joanne.
I was going to say, Joanne wrote the foreword to our book. Amazing pianist.
But yeah, I think we sometimes think of Fred as sort of a triumvirate, right? Like he's first and foremost a musician. And then he comes back to Pittsburgh and he enrolls in what later became the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. And so you have Fred the musician, you have Fred the minister / philosopher. And then, you know, he meets all these incredible learning scientists who happen to be working in Pittsburgh, people like Margaret McFarlane, who became his mentor, very famous people like Benjamin Spock, the physician. And so then you have Fred the scientist, you have the musician, the philosopher, and the scientist. All of those things blend together to become this television program that just millions of people have loved for generations.
And it was that scientist who was deliberate and intentional about things like music.
Yeah.
Think about the way that we entered the neighborhood as viewers, right? That one little buckaroo, Sean, that you sort of described, the way we each felt individually invited in, welcomed, and the familiarity of that opening, bringing us from the frenzy of the world into the quiet, slowing down pacing of the safety and joy and opportunity of the neighborhood, but then also how he used music to leave us each day and to give us comfort about what might come next. And those notes signaled so much to us as learners without using a single word. And even today, Ryan and I, and probably you, could walk into a, you know, any setting with a group of people and start singing, you know, I'll be back when the day is new, right? And it just, and you feel that settled familiarity and that emotional tug that we all remember so powerfully.
It is fascinating. Like Greg and I have had the absolute privilege of traveling all over the country to talk about this book. And first of all, like to just go around talking about Mr. Rogers is the best job in the world. But the like my probably my favorite part of it is sometimes Greg will burst into song and he will say, you know, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. And you can see the sort of reaction ripple through the audience. There is a relaxing of the shoulders. There is sort of a nostalgic smile, and the atmosphere of the room totally changes. People are put at ease, even if they haven't seen the neighborhood since they were a kid. That lingering effect is still so powerful. And yeah, it goes back to music.
And Sean, I apologize. We keep jumping in here, but it makes, deserves recognition too. The Fred Rogers Institute, which is based at St. Vincent College, just to the east of Pittsburgh. It's home to the Fred Rogers Archives, among other things. They have an endowed chair in music education.
Oh, wow.
Recognizing the importance of music and music education to that show. And they work with music educators across the country and highlight the critical role of those notes and those lyrics and the power of musical storytelling in something like the neighborhood, but what it means in learning generally. And I love that that is such a powerful part of their work at the Fred Rogers Institute.
And I'm going to jump in one more time because we have another connection. So Greg brought up the endowed chair at the Fred Rogers Institute. They have a very, they have a partnership with Gretsch Guitars. Oh. And as you know, John Lennon played a Gretsch guitar for the, I'm Googling this, I don't want to pretend I knew it, 1966 studio sessions.
Wow, another connection to the Beatles and Fred Rogers, Gretsch guitars, some of my favorite guitars. And let's go there even farther, my friends. George Harrison also played a Gretsch. And if I'm not mistaken, Gretsch guitars, we should Google this one. The Gretsch Guitar Company made a special Traveling Wilburys limited edition guitar.
Oh, I'm sure they did, right? They had to have.
They had to have. So, and I have a great appreciation for Gretsch. Mike Nesmith from the Monkees, that was his guitar. I'm a big Monkees guy too. So,
you're revealing yourself as a kid of the 70s.
Oh, totally. I share it with you. Yes. Fist pump, digital fist pump. So one of the things in terms of our respective entry points into the world of Fred Rogers, you know, obviously it was the TV show for all of us. And speaking of music for me, it was this album, A Place of Our Own. This I'm holding up for those of you who are listening and not seeing the video. This is an original copy of the A Place of Our Own album, circa 1972. And this album for me is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life. I've written about this before for PBS, how as a kid I suffered from nightmares, tremendous nightmares, and my mother would play this record for me. This was the only thing that would get me to go to sleep as a child, and help me overcome, you know, the kind of the childhood nightmare, you know, things that I had. And so that was kind of like, and this is lifelong. So Greg and Ryan, what was your respective entry points into the world of Fred Rogers, that not only it was an entry point, but it also it still resonates with you today.
Well, Ryan and I should note that we're both kids of Western Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. That's important because Fred Rogers himself was a kid of Western Pennsylvania, born in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, just to the east of Pittsburgh. And so we grew up essentially in Mr. Rogers' real life neighborhood. And so when you talk about a place like Pennsylvania and Western Pennsylvania in particular, you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, you talk about Permane sandwiches, you talk about Franco Harris, you talk about Fred Rogers. It just feels like it's part of the DNA. Personally, for me, I grew up much like you in the sense of being in my living room, often alongside my brother or my mom, watching episodes of The Neighborhood and listening to albums, vinyl albums like you have. And it's a core part. It's a core memory of my childhood of growing up with Fred Rogers. And it wasn't until adulthood that I realized that all of those interstitials and all of those moments in The Neighborhood were from, you know, that wasn't just universal for everyone, because there I was growing up in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and the places to which he was going, the museums, the gardens, the people he was meeting were people in my landscape. And it just seemed so normal. Ryan, you too are a kid of Western Pennsylvania.
I am. Yeah. And, you know, I think for me, I don't have a specific memory of, you know, entering the world of The Neighborhood. For me, he was just an enduring presence, right? He was on every day. Mm-hmm. I remember that music so well. I remember the sweaters so well. I knew the characters like they were my friends. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating when we sat down to write this book, because we watched so many episodes as adults, and I had not gone back to The Neighborhood since I was a kid. And I would see certain scenes of an episode, and I'd be like, I remember that. You know, I remember that so well. He was somebody that I felt like I knew growing up with. And it's fascinating, especially to talk about Mr. Rogers in the Pittsburgh area, because everybody here has a story of meeting Fred in real life. You know, sometimes they're very moving. There's one that we heard from somebody who, he met Fred at like a fundraiser, and it was just a quick passing conversation. And he said, you know, Fred, I loved your show. And Fred said, well, what was your favorite episode? And this guy said the Cram Factory episode, which is like what everybody says. It's everybody's favorite. And so a few months later, he gets a letter from Fred, you know, saying, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. And in it is a crayon. And it's just like, it's a reminder that even for Fred, he was a real person. And he knew how much those little moments matter, both on television and in real life. He was always leaving those little reminders for us.
It's so true.
Sean, I'm sorry, Sean.
Go ahead.
There are all sorts of traces of Fred Rogers in our own lives. So I met my wife at WQED Television. We were both on a community advisory board there.
Wow.
You know, we like to say that Fred Rogers introduced us. That's not true, of course. but there was Fred Rogers music in our wedding, you know, all of those years ago now. We, Ryan and I, have the privilege of knowing personally and professionally people like Bill Eisler and David Newell and Hedda Sherapin and others who worked with Fred all of those years ago and have become advisors and educators and friends to us. And that means so much. And I had the great joy and privilege of meeting Fred Rogers. I didn't meet him as a kid. I actually had some friends that were on the show all of those years ago. I met him as an adult. I still remember that moment, because the first time it happened, I froze, because I suddenly felt not like an adult, but like an 8-year-old child, right? Because you do have that moment of like, oh my goodness, this is Fred Rogers. We should say that his wife was every bit, if not more, special. I don't know how, she just was this extraordinary person, Joanne was, and got to know her during the last few decades of her life. And it was among the first phone calls that Ryan and I made when we decided that there's a book to be told about Fred, not just that emotional connection, but Fred, how he matters in the field of education today. And Joanne was an amazing early champion. She had the best encouragement, hugs, laughter you could imagine. And it's a gift forever that she wrote the foreword to our book. And
Which is the best part of the book, by the way.
It is the best part of the book.
That in page 109. as I sit here and hear that, Ryan and Greg, I wish I could have, met Joanne. I wish I could have, met Fred. But in a way, I did. We all did.
Yes.
Whether we had that physical connection, very much a part of Fred Rogers's ministry, and it was a ministry for the neighborhood, was to make that connection to the audience. He's speaking to you. He's interacting with you. He's listening to you. He's sharing with you. We're all invited. Everything. Hey, come on board the trolley. Let's go to the neighborhood of make-believe. Hey, I'll be back to see you. I'm proud of you. So again, for just a second there, man, I wish I could have met, and you dropped some very key names in the Fred Rogers, legacy. I picked up on David Knowles, speedy delivery. But what would you say is the connection for, and you write about this in your book, the connection for educators. Fred himself, I believe, probably one of the greatest, if not the best teachers in the 20th century. He reshaped education. He reshaped the learning landscape for us in his ministry and in his work on the neighborhood. But today, and really just the premise of your book, I'd love to hear y'all's take on that and your sharing of that.
It's really fascinating when we talk about this book to educators, because there's one word that folks have used that Greg and I never expected. And the word that has come up again and again and again is healing. And we've thought that that's so interesting that people, especially educators, find this book, find the lessons of Fred Rogers to be healing. And I think when people say that, I think what they mean is that they rediscover, when they look to what Fred did, why they got into this work in the first place. Right? We talk a lot about teacher burnout in this country, and that's a real problem. It's something that predates the pandemic. What Fred encourages us to do, that I don't think we've encouraged educators to do ourselves as a culture, as a society, is to bring the things that we love, the things that light us up, our Beatles fandom, right, into our classrooms, into our schools, into our learning spaces. Fred used to say that the best teacher in the world is someone who loves what he or she does and just loves it in front of you. And how often do we give educators the chance to love what it is that they love and to love it in front of their students? And I think being reminded of the importance of that and being validated of the importance of that, because I think teachers know it intuitively, it's refreshing. It's that same effect I mentioned earlier. You see a relaxing of the shoulders. You see a new sort of spark. You see renewed excitement about the field of education and learning. And if we can send people away from the book or away from our talks a little bit more excited to be themselves in front of their students, to love what they love in front of their students, then I think that, I hope that we're carrying on, Fred's message in a way that helps teachers everywhere.
And Sean, you described Fred as someone who ought to be known as one of the greatest 20th century educators. And we agree with that, right?
Yeah.
You should walk into schools of education across this country, on campuses of higher ed everywhere, and you see Bloom, Montessori, Fred, right? Yes. Because the way that we study Bloom's taxonomy or Montessori's methods, we should be studying the Fred method. And when we talk about the Fred method, we're talking about connecting what is timeless and classic about education and learning, like the role of deep and caring relationships, mm-hmm. with what is future facing. Right? Because let's think about Fred Rogers as a remarkable innovator who saw the newfangled technology of television, saw that it was attractive to kids, and said, how do I make that good and constructive? And he bridged what is timeless and classic with what is future facing and modern about education and learning. And for me and Ryan, that was our aha. This isn't just a book about an emotional and nostalgic connection to Fred Rogers, an American icon. This is a story about an educator whose work is as relevant now as it ever has been. Ryan's a former teacher. We both work in the field of education and learning. We have the privilege of sometimes working in the stratosphere and reading papers, learning science papers from places like Stanford or MIT, the University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon, and beyond. And our aha in writing this book was as we were writing these, you know, as we were reading these papers written by wickedly smart learning scientists and others, increasingly they read to us like scripts from the neighborhood. And as we did so, we thought, you know, is there a story to tell about Fred that's different? And as you unpack Fred's story, and Ryan mentioned this earlier, you realize that he was a deliberate and intentional scientist about his work, who had the great opportunity to study alongside the likes of Benjamin Spock and Eric Erickson and Margaret McFarlane and others, and absorbed all of that and presented it ultimately in puppetry and lyrics and a wardrobe and a physical set, right? He made it so seamless. But everything that he did was deliberate and intentional, the way that great teachers are in their classrooms or librarians are in their settings. And so in our book, yes, we take you to an emotional place, but then we connect you to the learning sciences and then give you real life modern 2023 examples of people in education settings today using that Fred method, the way that we might use a Montessori method or Bloom's taxonomy.
And it's what's really fascinating about this stuff, I mean, to us, was that just how far ahead of his time Fred was. You know, some of these papers we're reading came out 10, 15 years after Fred's death. And this is cutting edge learning science. And you look at the conclusions and you can go back to basically any episode of The Neighborhood and you see Fred doing that. You see Fred doing that all the way back in the late 1960s. It is incredible how intentional every little thing he did in The Neighborhood really was, how grounded in science it really was. And that's not part of the Fred Rogers story, you know, that we know. We often look to Fred Rogers, the man, who was an incredible person. It's absolutely worth examining his life and finding out what he was like. But the methods he used, Greg used that term, the Fred method, you know, it's powerful. And it's not just a good feeling. It is empirically powerful. We have all sorts of hard data now that this stuff, the stuff he did in The Neighborhood, works. And it can work for us too.
So, and again, the edification here, you know, often when we talk about Mr. Rogers, we talk about, you know, the caricature that's out there. We talk about the nostalgic feeling that we get. It's such a good feeling, you know. Sorry,
No, it's good. It's very good.
Yeah, I had to. I thank you, Greg. You dropped the mic earlier, so we got to keep up. Keep up with you. But and we also you know, talk about you know, his biography, you know, his life. But rarely do we hear Fred in this realm of scientist.
Yeah.
The intentionality. I mean, he was handwriting scripts. You know, he surrounded himself, you know, with great educational and child psychologist minds and crafted a show which seemingly simple. And also too, I love, Ryan, how you framed the notion of that TV was this kind of newfangled idea. I think y'all write about it too in the book, you know, how children's TV is not, you know, in the 50s was very much pie in your face, soupy sales, you know, pandering to kids, selling a product. He refused kind of any kind of endorsements. Fred Rogers did. So this notion of the teacher as a scientist, the educator as a scientist. I'd love for you and Greg, you talked about some of the papers that you saw in the archive. Where were some examples of that where you saw Fred as a scientist in those pieces?
Well, one of my favorite, I love to talk about a piece of research that comes from this century, wherein a group of college scientists studied some college-age students and at first gave this group of college-age students a fake personality test, right? And then based on the results, they divided them into three groups. And they told one group, you're going to have rich, rewarding relationships in your lifetime based on this personality test. And they tell the second group, it's not going to be as rich and rewarding. Your friendships are going to fade. They're going to be fraying. It's going to be a little more difficult. And then they tell a third group, you know, based on the results of this personality test, we're not sure exactly why, but you're going to be subject to all sorts of bad things in your life. Bad things are going to happen to you. And then they give all of these students an IQ test. Sean, which of the groups failed this IQ test?
Wow.
Group number one, group number two, or group number three?
I'm going to just go out on a limb here. Maybe one.
So most people get this wrong.
Yeah.
Typically, people will say group number three, the bad news, because you would think like this group just got bad news. They're going to just collapse under the pressure of this IQ test. It's actually group number two. And it's group number two.
I would have thought it would have been the opposite. That's why I was doing like the reverse psychology.
Yeah, no, especially when I put you on the spot like that. You're like, that's well, okay. It must be the most absurd answer, right?
Yeah.
But it's group number two because in that moment, when these students were faced with the prospect of social isolation and relationships fraying, that somehow they couldn't do the sort of typical things you would do in an IQ test. And they lost the ability to reason and they lost the ability to apply logic and they just froze in that moment. Now, fortunately, those researchers told all these kids, like, this has been a ruse. There's nothing true about this. We're so sorry. But that study underscores the radical message of Fred's work. And at the core of every single program was the sensibility that I like you just the way you are.
Yeah.
Right. And Fred wasn't saying like you're perfect or everything that you do or say is okay or even good. But what he was saying was, I see you. I love you. I respect your humanity. Mm-hmm. That's just one example of modern learning science driving home an aspect that was so core to the neighborhood of creating that safe space, that sense of belonging, and that's in the importance of respect and creating the base atmosphere that then allows people to apply logic and reason and learning and everything that you do in a classroom or other learning setting.
It's interesting that you brought up the archive because Greg mentioned the archive is housed at the Fred Rogers Institute in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. It's absolutely worth seeing for a couple of reasons. So you walk into the archive and it's just sort of like a bland office room, you know, fluorescent lighting, rows and rows of boxes. But in those boxes are 50 years worth of correspondence, right? Every letter that got sent to Fred is there. If any of your listeners ever wrote Mr. Rogers a letter, they can probably go find it. And what's really fascinating is that on those letters, you can see Fred's handwritten notations. Fred responded to every letter he got. And so you can almost draw a direct line between the concerns that kids and adults are sharing with him in these letters and then what he's talking about in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Television is a one-way medium, but the neighborhood was very much a conversation. He was listening to children. He was listening to parents. He was listening to educators. He knew what was on their minds, and he was responding in that way that Greg just mentioned, with that sort of sensibility of, listen, I hear you. I see you. And despite all the things that are going on in your life, your anxieties, your grief, I like you just the way you are. Those big feelings are okay. And, you know, over time that created what Fred called an atmosphere. So there was a reporter that once asked Fred, you know, what is Mr. Rogers' name? What are you trying to accomplish with this television program? And Fred said, you know, it's not a television program. It's an atmosphere. It's an atmosphere that allows people to be comfortable enough to be who they really are. Because when they're that comfortable, that's when they become the best versions of themselves.
That's so beautifully stated. You know, with this podcast, which is somewhat my attempt, and I really, it is very much my attempt to do what the Beatles did, maybe not with music, but with personal connection. You know, I shared with you earlier how their early songs, you know, I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, that was all intentional by Lennon and McCartney when they were writing those songs together to connect with their audience. Mr. Rogers, you know, his attempt in the show to, you know, look directly into the camera, speaking to you. I mean, so much so that, you know, this album scared away, you know, the monsters that were plaguing me, yeah. Right? And I felt like he was with me in my room, helping me through the night. So this notion of connection is so important. How would you say, Greg, that educators today can maybe take a lesson from that and what we're deeming as the Fred factor, the Fred School of Education?
Well, that's the thing. You and I and everyone else can do that in a classroom. We can do it in our own kitchens. We can do it in all sorts of places. It's the small little moments that we create that, to Ryan's point, create the atmosphere. It's, you know, we cite studies about the importance of a teacher being in the front of the classroom, maybe standing by the door, and just to each child, welcoming him or her into that space. I love to cite the example that Hedda Sherapin shared with us. She relays being in a classroom observing a teacher go about her lesson. And she comments as she walked in the classroom, there's this large wicker basket, right? And she's like, I wonder what this basket's for. And she realized that as the instruction unfolded in the classroom, the teacher was celebrating the questions that students were asking, whether they were directly on point or, you know, coming from far over the left field wall. The teacher was taking the moment to notice that a student was asking a question, to acknowledge that a question had been asked. If it was on point, directly answering it at that moment, because it was pedagogically important, but more often than not, taking a piece of paper, writing it down and saying, together, we're going to wonder about your question later. What does that do for a student in that moment? It gives a sense that my questions matter, that I'm respected, that I'm noticed, that we're going to wonder about big things and it's okay to wonder. You and I can do that in our own kitchens, right? I mean, I think about how many times my kids ask questions and look, I'm by far a perfect dad. And there are sometimes I'm just like, stop asking questions, right? But like, I can do that with a Rubbermaid bowl and like say, you know, that's a really interesting question. Let's wonder about that later. You know, it's oftentimes, it's not the grand, big sweeping moments. It's those small connections, those small tactical things that we do that in aggregate create the atmosphere.
Those tiny moments. And we all have that teacher that, It may seemingly be a tiny moment or a small moment, but the impact of that moment is so far reaching and so impactful. And Fred did that so beautifully in the course of his show. There, you know, weren't a whole lot of special effects. You know, maybe with you know, Lady Elaine Fairchild with the, you know, the boomerang, tumerang, sumerang, you may see a little animated something or, you know, quick cut, but again, the show was rooted in this beautifully succinct simplicity that he could speak at all different levels. We call that in the business differentiated instruction or personalized learning.
I was thinking the same thing, right? I just was about to say that, Sean, that when we talk about differentiation or today we talk about personalized learning, think about all of those little Fred moments that we can create. So that student feels like that one little buckaroo, as Fred described. Yeah. You know, in this case, it might be in real life, 3 feet away from you. But what are those small little moments that build that connection, build that trust, build that sense of belonging, provoke wonder? And we have in our book all sorts of tiny examples. It's in fact how we finish each chapter.
Yes.
Simple examples of things that you and I might do, whether you're a master teacher or you're a brand new parent struggling with trying to figure out what to do in this world.
You know, Ryan, the concept of Fred as an innovator, you both touched upon earlier in terms of the medium of television. and starting off in the golden age of television. You know, Fred was an intern at NBC, you know, during those kind of the early golden days of television, and he saw something of value in TV that was unheard of and unprecedented. I mean, there was kind of no template for him. And we today, and often even before today, we talk about the notion of innovation in education. We talk about you know, schools you know, trying to go outside of their box a little bit and take a pivot into doing something, whether it's in STEM learning or STEAM or technology. How would you say Fred would maybe respond to innovation today, or those things that are categorically, you know, put under the umbrella of innovation? I mean, I just spent the last 3 days at a tech conference here in North Carolina, which I enjoyed greatly. But how do you think Fred would respond to STEM and STEAM and ed tech and those things?
That's a really interesting question. You know, when Fred first turned on a television, the first thing he saw, you mentioned this earlier, was people throwing pies in each other's faces. And he said he hated to see technology being used to demean other people, right? So we can only imagine what Fred would think of TikTok and Twitter, right? But he ran into the fire, so to speak. He didn't run away from the technology itself. He saw it as a tool to nurture what he considered the most important thing, which is deep human connection. And I think that all the ed tech we have now, all the new tools we have now, I think there's the potential for that too, right? So everyone's talking about ChatGPT right now, and for good reason. Like, this is an incredible innovation. It is scary on one hand, it is absolutely amazing on the other. I don't yet know what it's going to do to or for education and learning, but I do know that it depends on how we use it, right? If ChatGPT and EdTech and all the innovations we have in the field right now can be used to free up teachers from, you know, sort of time-consuming tasks, the day-to-day work that takes teachers away from what's most important in education, which is building those relationships, I think we forget sometimes that innovation is supposed to be in service of that sort of thing. So if we can use AI, if we can use EdTech to find ways, as Fred did, to nurture those connections with the people we care about, with the people we're in service of, mm-hmm. Then I think then we're applying the Fred method ourselves. I think we're doing what Fred did, which is seeing technology as a tool, you know, not the end game itself. It's a tool for knowing, it's a tool for loving, it's a tool for caring for one another. That's what Fred turned television into. It's one of the very few people to ever do that. But each of us, you know, he left us the blueprints. How do we take what Fred did with television and do that ourselves in the digital age? That was ultimately the question that drove us to write this book. And it's the question that we're still answering. All of us together. I don't just mean me and Greg. I mean, as a field, as adults. It's a question that's going to be ever evolving. But it's nice when things are scary, when you first watch ChatGPT spit out something astounding, to know that we can look for guidance in a familiar figure, someone who means so much to us, and that's Fred Rogers.
Right on. And the, you know, it's funny, ChatGPT, I heard a lot about that at this tech conference I was at, and how it is going to be or it is ubiquitous now, and, sure. and it's not going anywhere, just like the iPhone, just like television, right? You know, just like picture. I mean, there are so many things embedded in there that he took, and something like television, like he took something that has been and continues to be used as a vehicle for negativity or for bad. And he took it, you know, head first, and tried to transform it into it. And he did, he transformed it into something that was for good. And then you made mention of just certain things, with ed tech. I mean, And Greg, you mentioned this as well. Like he wrote back, you know, he was a voracious letter writer. One of my entry points to Fred Rogers as an adult was I remember reading about him, his retirement, you know, when he retired from television, but he was going to continue on with the work of the neighborhood in his own way and building up the institute and doing this. And he said, you know, I really want to explore this idea of email. and he said that he is now, you know, he was enjoying it and that he responds to emails. So that was, I remember going on the website, finding clicking on the icon to write him. And I wrote this kind of brain dump and very emotional. And I remember crying as I was writing the letter because Fred does that, right? He that connection that he makes. And I just kind of shared all this stuff about being a dad and not thinking I was going to get anything back. I mean, I was hoping maybe within 2 or 3 days, he wrote me back.
Wow.
And it was a personalized letter to me, and I could hear his voice. I still have it. I printed it up, and I probably should put it in a safe space. But that connection, that relationship, that he just does so artfully. It's a lesson that we should still carry with us today, with educators who are so busy. Greg, you know, we may not take the time as Fred did to pause and to be silent and to connect. So what advice would you give for that educator that is rushing? They may be rushing through this podcast, brushing their teeth or getting their kids ready for school or running to the copy, you know, I got to get to the copy machine or what have you, but what's a tool or lesson or idea from the book that you would advise a teacher could take now? Yeah. And do either in the next hour or 15 minutes or tomorrow.
Sean, it seems so simple. I'm going to use the word notice, right? And I say that because none of us should try and compare ourselves to Fred Rogers.
Yeah.
And Joanne, his wife, was quick to say, you know, Fred wasn't a saint. Fred got mad. Fred got angry. Fred got frustrated. What Fred would want each of us to do is to be our authentic selves. And there is a reality, as it was for Fred too, right? There is the rush of life, and there are things happening in our lives personally and professionally. And as a teacher whom we cited in the book, Melissa Butler, and thinking about the word innovation you used a few minutes ago, she describes innovation as finding something new in something familiar. So I would say, notice what's going on around you. Notice what's happening in the classroom down the hall. Notice what's happening in your neighborhood. Notice what's happening in the library, the museum. Look out to that neighborhood. Look out to the learning landscape. And notice something that's attractive to kids. And then try and struggle with it a little bit. Like, how do I make sense of that? How might I apply it? And then sort of embrace that wonder yourself and try something. It's that Monday experiment. It's that Saturday experiment. It's just try something that builds deep and caring relationship, connects with your own passion, whether it's the Beatles or bee making or crafting. Connect it to your own love. Because as Ryan said earlier, and as Fred Rogers said well, the best teacher in the world is the one that loves what he or she does and loves it right in front of you.
Amen. Amen. I would be remiss if we didn't do this exercise of Fred's, and I believe you all can indulge me. And I will say that for those of you that are listening or viewing, there's nothing wrong with your podcast. There's nothing wrong with your interface, but we're going to do something. If you saw the Tom Hanks film, was probably my favorite scene in the film. The scene of silence, and I'm getting a little emotional now thinking about that. But
do you want me to read it to you, Sean?
Please, yeah. It's such a beautiful scene, and Ryan, if you could, because Man.
I know. I feel it too. Okay. Yeah. So like Sean said, there's nothing wrong with your podcast. You're going to hear a little bit of quiet. But I hope that you can take this time and make it meaningful for yourself. So this is an exercise that Fred used to do when he gave speeches. And Greg and I think that this exercise sums up everything Fred was about, right? It sums up everything Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood tried to accomplish. So I'm just going to recite it word for word.
Thank you. Mm.
From the time you were very little, you've had people who have talked you into talking, sung you into singing, smiled you into smiling, loved you into loving. Some of them may be here right now. Some may be far away. Some may even be in heaven. But wherever they are, if they've loved you and encouraged you and wanted what was best in life for you, then they're right inside yourself. And I feel that you deserve some quiet time on this special occasion to devote some thought to them. So let's just take a minute in honor of those who've cared about us all along the way. One silent minute.
Wow. I could have probably taken 5 minutes.
You know, that reminds me that line in there, wherever they are, if they've loved you and encouraged you and wanted what was best in life for you, they're right inside yourself.
Yes.
That reminds me of what you said earlier, Sean, that you wish you met Fred, but really you did. Like, you carry him with you, right? I was thinking the other day, so Greg mentioned Hedda Sherapin, and sometimes Hedda was a producer on The Neighborhood, and sometimes we have trouble figuring out where Hedda stops and Fred begins because they're so similar in their sensibilities. And Hedda, she's probably the most Fred-like person I've ever met. And, you know, I recently had an infant son, and Hedda, out of the goodness of her heart, knitted him a blanket and brought it over to my house and gave it to him. And to grow up with The Neighborhood.
All right.
To hey, grow up.
It's okay, man. It's okay. I'm weeping. I lost. I've been weep crying for the last 10 minutes and really trying to hold it in for the last hour. So it's okay. Okay.
To grow up with Mr. Rogers, and then to have the opportunity to do this work and meet the people who helped make Fred who he is and help bring his work to the world.
Yeah.
And then to have them now taking care of my son, you know, watching him
gosh,
wrapped in this blanket that had made him, knowing that, you know, the neighborhood is still taking care of us, right?
And the neighborhood is still possible, right? Right. Sean, it makes us think of a question that Fred was asked at the turn of the millennium. A journalist turned to him and said, Fred, what is the greatest challenge facing humanity? And Fred, in an especially profound moment, said, make goodness attractive. That's one of the toughest assignments you'll ever be given.
Oh, man.
So isn't that the challenge to each of us? To make goodness attractive and to add just a little bit of love to this world. 1, 4, 3. As you said, there's one letter in I, 4 letters in love, and 3 letters in you.
That's right.
Isn't that a challenge for each of us to add a little bit of goodness to this world and to say, I love you?
That's why I love that exercise so much. Like, whoever it is you were thinking about during that one silent minute, it might be a parent or a friend. It could be Fred Rogers himself.
Yeah.
That person is proof that making goodness attractive is possible.
It is. And speaking of that, I mean, the Tom Hanks film is kind of a great entry point for those that may be struggling with that or don't know. I mean, the guy should have gotten the Oscar, but I'm a little biased there, but yes, this notion of making goodness attractive in a world where we have so much noise, where we do default to negativity, we do default to hatred, we do default to so many things, and I'm guilty of that, from time to time. I try not to be, but to make goodness attractive is so important. And what a great lesson from Fred Rogers. Ryan and Greg, I'm really grateful for you.
Thank you.
Grateful for the work that you do. How lucky that the world is and our readers of your book are to have encountered your words and your transference of Fred Rogers' legacy as an educator. And you both, as Fred said, and I often do this in the sign off, don't forget to share with the world your dreams and your visions, because they help make the world a better place, because you help make the world a better place. And that's kind of like that's my little nod to Fred Rogers at the end of every podcast. And I definitely share that you both exemplify that. And so thank you. And thank you for sharing your words, your story, your tears, your joy, your laughter. And thank you for giving me the space. Because I didn't think I was going to make it. So Ryan, we didn't rehearse this, guys, by the way, for those of you that are listening. I didn't expect to do that. That minute of silence. But just in our connection and conversation, I said I'll go for broke, and Ryan and Greg, you guys kind of just as neighbors do, right? That's what we do. And it's in your shirt, Greg, you know, like look helpers. And that's what you did, and that's what you do. And I'm so grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. This has been such a pleasure.
It's been our joy. And thank you for what you do, Sean. Thank you.
Thank you for all your listeners too, all you educators out there. Thank you.
Yes. The book, listeners and viewers and friends and neighbors, is When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, and Caring Kids. And I have the hardcover version, and it is in paperback now. And obviously it's Kindle digital. We can find it in any bookstore.
That's right. Wherever you get your books, ideally you can find this book.
Awesome. The other thing, Greg and Ryan, is a lot of our listeners are connected in various PLNs and use social media. And I'm sure, in addition to going on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and picking up a copy of When You Wonder, You're Learning, or going to their neighborhood bookstore, which is also important. How can folks follow and connect with you through social media?
That's a great, great point. So the paperback version of the book, I'll say this, includes a sort of discussion guide that is great for PLNs. You can contact Greg and me anytime at whenyouwonderbook@gmail.com. We are always happy to Zoom or even drop in person with educators to talk about the book, to talk about the FRED method. We're always available. Talking to educators is probably the most rewarding part of this whole journey.
And you can find us on social media platforms. So Ryan Rudzeski, also at Greg Bear on Twitter, LinkedIn. You can also use When You Wonder across Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can find us just about anywhere.
Awesome. And I will say, listeners, you cannot find two of the most sincere and genuine and empathetic souls. So I do highly recommend you connect, engage in conversation. If you're looking for ideas and ways to take the FRED method into your schoolhouse or your neighborhood or your organization, his work is our work. What we're doing in service of kids is so, so important. And so, I cannot stress this is required reading. But I hope that you're able to put some of the things into practice. And as Greg said, just one word, notice. That's it. That's the entry point. And I'm grateful for that. This is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. I have found two bandmates. Greg and Ryan, just as you've given so much in this podcast, I'm in your band. I'm in your neighborhood. So whatever I can do to help and support, please call on me or anyone tuning into the podcast. But I have found two brothers. I really mean that. And I have found two bandmates. And so thank you for a really special and powerful hour. Thank you, guys. Episode 109.
An honorary episode 143.
That's right.
Honorary. Pick up the book and find out what happened on page 109. It's a great story.
Yes. Go to page 109, my friends, and you'll go right there. So this is the Principal Liner Notes podcast, episode 109. Turn to page 109 in the book, When You Wonder You're Learning, by Greg Bear and Ryan Rudzeski. Yes.
Got it.
And tune in again for episode 110. I don't even know what that's going to be. So I may invite these guys back. We'll continue talking about the FRED method. So Principal Liner Notes podcast, this is Sean Gaylor. Don't forget to share with the world your dreams and your visions and your ideas. Don't forget the power of the word notice. You help make the world a better place, and the world needs your dreams and your visions, and the world needs you to notice others, just as my friends Greg and Ryan and myself notice you. Thank you.